People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, we bring you a speech given at Cornell University by Executive Director of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, Sherry Honkala.
Our invisibility is incredibly dangerous, and that's why we are marching on opening day of the Republican Freudian slip. The Winter Olympics. You know, because there's going to be the 1,500 reporters there from around the world. And we think that the American people are just beautiful people. They just don't see what's happening to people. And we think that that's the fundamental problem. If they really saw what was happening to people, we as a people in this country, we wouldn't tolerate it for another minute. And so that really is the problem. Is we've got to start, you know, organizing reality tours. Hell, have everybody from Cornell for a day charter buses and go visit, you know, a soup kitchen or go interview some homeless people or go talk to a factory that's about ready to lay off everybody. Those are the ways that people really begin to, it's the human factor. Decide that they need to get involved because people begin to have faces instead of numbers.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. The war against terrorism has been going on for some 4 months, but the war against the poor in America has been going on for decades. With gentrification and urban renewal programs, there's less housing in America's cities, and that means more people are homeless. On top of that, the welfare reform hammer is poised to strike. Sherry Honkala of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union is a frontline fighter in this battle. She spoke late last year at Cornell University.
My name is Lindsay Saunders, and I'm a member of the Coalition for the Homeless, one of three groups that helps bring the Kensington Welfare Rights Union here, as well as Water Margin Cooperative and COLA. If you are interested in getting involved with any educational campaigns and so forth on campus, feel free to contact me, Lindsay Saunders. My email address is LAS56. Now I'll go ahead and introduce the speaker. This is Sherry Honkala. She's the Executive Director of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, and we are all very happy to have her here today.
Can you hear me? It's really important because I have a lot of things to say. I want to start off by telling you a little story that I usually begin any talk with when I talk about how the Kensington Welfare Rights Union came to use human rights language and begin to approach our work from a human rights perspective. It's a little unorthodox, a little different than sitting in a classroom and somebody passing out the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and telling us that these were the rights that we have and that we should do something to reclaim these rights. It was actually in 1995 in which the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, if you don't know anything about our organization, when homeless families are in need of some place to live, we either move them into abandoned houses or we build encampments, and they sometimes turn into towns. And this particular encampment or town, we always think that somebody's responsible for the development of these shanty towns, so we make sure that we give these shanty towns names. And this particular shanty town we called Ridgeville, after our governor, because, after all, he was responsible for the population of people in the town. And so people would come up to American Street, and it would say, "Welcome to Ridgeville." And we would have homeless families living in shacks, and we'd use plastic, and if we were lucky, we would have some wood, and we would do whatever we possibly could. Thank you, Galen. In order that the families could stay together, they could stay alive, And one day, we got a horrible message, which is two portable toilets showed up with a little note from the mayor saying, I hope that these toilets will be of assistance to you. So to us, it was kind of like saying, you know, get ready to live like this forever and expand your town and we'll provide you with toilets. And so we decided out of necessity that we had to begin to go someplace else and to do something different. So from that encampment, we decided to march for 7 days. We marched to Harrisburg to meet with our governor and to ask him, what would we do with all of these homeless families? And when we got to Harrisburg, after marching for about 22 miles each and every day, we didn't know that you had to put Vaseline on your feet. We didn't know anything about long marches. We just got up every day and marched until we basically dropped in the evening and slept alongside the roadside with our children. When we arrived at the governor's mansion, he didn't even send out the janitor. And so we lined up, remembering the history of Senator Roxanne Jones, who was the first welfare recipient to run for state senator in Pennsylvania, who at one time had been furious with the governor, and she had taken off her shoes in the middle of a debate and hurled her shoes at the governor. We decided to pass on her legacy. And so all of us, all the homeless people, lined up in front of the governor's mansion, took off our shoes, and hurled them onto the governor's lawn. Needless to say, this was not a good idea after marching for 7 days, to be left with your blisters now on the roadside with all of our shoes laying on the lawn. But we decided then that the homeless families needed some place to go. This was not just a demonstration. This was not symbolic. So we took all of the homeless families and we moved ourselves into the Capitol Rotunda. And while we were in the Capitol Rotunda, we got to know the janitorial staff. We got to understand how politics work. And the first day that we were there, they were having a bipartisan event of champagne and caviar. And they arrived in ballroom gowns in the rotunda. And the head of the Democratic Party stepped to us and said, could you go down to the end of the hallway and I'll give you some free box lunches. And one of the homeless women said it the best, which is, we didn't walk for 7 days to talk about being homeless in Pennsylvania to be hidden down at the end of the hallway for a free box lunch. Needless to say, that evening they had the shortest event I think they've ever had in their life, with us sitting on the stairs, them in their gowns and with their champagne and caviar. They quickly decided to go home. But we remained there on the floor in the rotunda for about 6 weeks. And it was very exciting to the homeless families to have things like running water, to be able to use a toilet, to have the experience of heat in the evening, and to be able to have lights, to be able to see your way around in the evening. And so while we were there, we were also engaged in other kinds of activities that happen in our capital, which is they decided to have, a couple people decided to get married in the rotunda. And so we got the leftover food from the weddings, and we got the bouquets, and the brides wished us well. People began to, janitorial staff began to bring in their children, saying, this is what real homeless people look like. We'd wave. People began taking little field trips to look at the specimen of homeless people inside this building. And then one day came where they began to post notices around the entire Capitol stating that this public building now had a closing time. And so one day, when we didn't expect it, the entire state troopers in Pennsylvania filled the rotunda and literally picked us up and threw us out onto the front stairs. And while we were out on the front stairs, we decided that we had to stay. We had no place else to go. So we took big pieces of plastic and created a huge encampment on the Capitol stairs. And this time, the homeless people that they wanted to make invisible, the governor now approached the Capitol in the morning to a sign that said, there by the grace of God go I, welcome to Ridgeville. And so people from all over Pennsylvania could see us on the Capitol stairs. And every day that we were there, we began to gather support from different people throughout Pennsylvania. And then the day came when they threatened that tomorrow at noon that they would evict the homeless families from the Capitol stairs after we had been there for another 6 weeks through the rain and the cold weather and you name it, but we still hung in with each other. And on that day, we decided that we would ask community legal services for assistance because, after all, we had First Amendment rights. We had a right to demonstrate on public stairs. Certainly, if they could throw us out of a public building, we had a right to be on public stairs. And when homeless people, the last thing that they have is their voice, certainly that can't be taken away. And then that horrible morning came when the head of legal services came and spoke to me on the Capitol stairs saying, "Sherry, I'm terribly sorry, but we've been threatened by the governor to take $1 million from our budget. We're not going to be able to represent you in order to keep you on the Capitol stairs." So we decided to organize a tour of the governor's mansion at the same time that we were expected to be evicted from the Capitol stairs. And then we returned after our wonderful tour, and the mother spoke out about what it was like to see that the governor's dogs lived better than their children. And that night on the Capitol stairs, the coldest night in October, at about 2 o'clock in the morning, the governor ordered the removal of the blankets. State troopers came and took blankets from men, women, and children on the coldest night in October. And it was that night that we had to walk. We walked to the end of the grocery store, and we got plastic from Sheetz Grocery Store and cardboard. And we wrapped ourselves in cardboard and plastic and continued to take shifts in walking all night so that nobody would die from hypothermia. That's how the Kensington Welfare Rights Union came to understand human rights, what it felt like to be considered less than a human being. That's how we came to use the language of economic human rights. I'm so happy that all of you could be here tonight and take time out of your very busy schedules to let me share some of my thoughts with you about the dire situation that we find ourselves in as a nation. And I'm not referring to Afghanistan or anthrax. I'm talking about the emergency situation of absolute poverty of our poor, that they are barely enduring and barely surviving. I'm talking about poverty in the United States of America, in the land of plenty. Let me begin by talking about our children, the thing that we say as a country is our most important and precious thing in our society. 1 in 2 of our children will never complete a single year at Cornell or at any other college across our country. 1 in 3 will be a year or more behind in school, and 1 in 4 will be born poor. 1 in 5 is poor right now, and 1 in 5 will be born to a mother who will never have had prenatal care. 1 in 7 will live with a parent who works but still is poor, regardless of them working full time. 1 in 11 lives at less than half of the poverty level, and 1 in 132 will die before the age of 1 this year. And in 1 in 680 will be killed before they reach the age of 20 by being shot to death by a handgun. Yet every 14 hours we will spend more on the military than we do annually on programs for children. Every 29 hours we will spend more on the military than we do annually on a summer jobs program for our unemployed youth. while millions in today's America are deprived of their basic human right to food, to housing, health care, and a living wage job, the U.S. infant mortality rate continues to soar, and so do poverty rates and illiteracy rates. They are amongst the world's worst for an industrialized nation. We will watch as the number of millionaires continues to triple, while the ranks of the homeless are doubling and the looming crisis of millions of more are about to line our streets next year as we dismantle our only safety net that we've had in our country. As women and children begin to hit their 5-year lifetime limit on public assistance, and they are cut from the rolls forever. Some estimate that more American children die each month because of poverty than the total United States combat deaths in the entire Vietnam War. Yet many of us continue to wallow in illusions of opportunity, that somehow we will make it, somehow we will be different, and somehow we can sit this one out, that we have no responsibility to the next generation. But American children are counting on you, are counting on the students here at Cornell, and so are we, the poor in this country, because we know that we can no longer fight this fight alone. We know that there has been an undeclared war, and we will not win it without your assistance. This movement needs you now more than ever to use your power and, yes, your privilege as students to help in the building of a massive movement for economic human rights. We need you to document the stories of those who aren't surviving this undeclared war. We need you to hold teach-ins on this very campus about what's really happening in our country. We need you to hold marches and rallies and speak-outs and give voices to those of us who are being made invisible or are being made to absolutely disappear through the prisons, the drugs, and to death because we don't have these basic rights. And as we begin to watch the faces of the poor as we see them over and over again, of the poor in Afghanistan, let us think of the faces of the poor that you will never see on television as at home. And as you cringe in the fear of encountering anthrax or cry for the 13 people who have died from exposure, cry too for the thousands who have been exposed to heroin and crack cocaine and didn't have a right to recovery or mental health care and have died as a result. Yes, we understand the problem of being a part of an invisible war in which no humanitarian packets are being made for our fighters here at home who are struggling for their survival. We understand the importance of making this war at home visible to the entire world. So that is why we are organizing a march on opening day of the Winter Olympics in Utah. We will wear green scarves to show our growing unity with the poor around the world, and most importantly, with the largest poor people's movement in India, the peasant farmers. We will also continue to house families by moving them into government abandoned properties or by building other Ridgevilles or building other encampments in the shadows of mansions. And as we struggle to keep our people alive by doing food distributions and engaging them in the fight for their very survival as we teach them how to fight, let us ask the question tonight: what will you do? We know that what we are doing, those of us that have been pushed to the edge and what we will do, the question is, what will you do? What will you do for the American children, America's next generation, the future of our country collectively resides in your hands. Now it's up to you to help us decide what kind of society all of us will live in. We're doing our part. Will you do yours? Thank you.
After her speech, Sherry Hankala took questions from the Cornell audience. First, she addressed the various levels of political activity that the Kensington Welfare Rights Union is engaged in, as well as the situation with affordable housing in Philadelphia.
Strike a matrix pose for me, could you guys? No, just kidding. We fight things in the courts, the streets, and in the legislature. You know, I'd lie to you if I said that we weren't involved in developing policy on a local and a national level. From congressional members calling us to us having congressional breakfasts in Washington, D.C. with different important muckety-mucks to important meetings that we have at our Capitol in Harrisburg. So, I mean, currently right now we're engaged in they're going to spend X amount of billions of dollars right now in Philadelphia. We've got a wonderful mayor, Mayor Street. He was highlighted from our wonderful President Bush, our governor, you know, the guy in charge of Homeland Security. You know, our chief of police. Okay, I know. He came from New York. It's pretty scary people there. But So, yes, we're involved right now in a fight to take some of the billions of dollars that are going to be spent on demolition of the 27,000 abandoned houses in Philadelphia because there's a blight problem. We're hoping that $1.95 of that blight money will go towards the development of affordable housing. Right now, however, there's not one city council member. Drink my water, please. No. That is interested in using any of that money for affordable housing. Our mayor, it ran on a anti-blight. You know, blight is like, you know, the graffiti, the abandoned cars, the abandoned houses, trash, loads of trash. And if you just clean it all up, right? It's going to bring back the economy and revitalize the neighborhood and bring everybody that has participated in suburban flight back to the city if you just do this major cleanup job. And, of course, that's not what's happening. We're turning into, you know, what's happening across the country, like in Detroit, you know. You just have fields of abandoned land that used to be houses in which people that used to live in those houses used to work at General Motors. But now you have really nice land, or in Philadelphia, we're trying to set up gardens in each of these abandoned property lots. So you too can have a garden in a former refinery site. In Kensington.
Next was a question about housing takeovers.
We're problematic for the blight plan right now, because if you have 27,000 abandoned houses, 23,000 homeless people, and the Kensington Welfare Rights Union's busy moving the homeless people into these abandoned houses, it kind of gets away in the way of your blight plan. So it's pretty hard to demolish properties if human beings are living in them. So it's been very effective. I mean, what can I say? They're great. I mean, it's great to have a house, and particularly like in the Midwest, in different parts of the country, they keep the heat on throughout the wintertime because they don't want the pipes to freeze and break. And so you have heated abandoned houses that somebody was thrown out of because they were foreclosed upon and the government takes possession of. And then they pay a realtor, they contract with a realtor to ensure that the property remains vacant. It's a hell of a plan, isn't it?
And then a question about what an economically just policy might look like.
You know, I think as the situation gets worse, this is going to be a harder conversation. because I'd like to just suggest, you know, to go up to a particular section on our website where we suggest various different policy changes or our different elected officials that we can talk to change these various different things. You know, of course, we're advocating universal health care, affordable housing, living wage jobs, all of these kinds of things. But first, we think that, you know, next year is right around the corner. And millions of people are going to lose their only way of feeding, clothing, or housing themselves. And something is going to happen. There's just no way that you can take millions of people and cut them off of the rolls in the same year and have nothing happen. On March 3rd, that very day, just in Philadelphia, 8,000 people in Philly are going to be cut off of their only way to feed, clothe, and house themselves. This is on top of a 10-year waiting list for affordable housing and a freeze on even being able to apply for emergency housing, where you can't apply anymore. So, yes, of course we have a vision of what a new, you know, a different kind of world would look like. People would be employed. We'd make use of people's skills. We'd create the kinds, there's plenty of jobs that could be created, all of these kinds of things. But right now, we're trying to figure out how do we keep these people alive so that all of us can engage in this upcoming fight that we're going to have to, out of necessity, be a part of. Because starving to death and freezing to death on the streets of America is just really not up for negotiations. Our invisibility is incredibly dangerous. And that's why we are marching on opening day of the Republican, Freudian slip, although we did that too, of the Winter Olympics. You know, because there's going to be the 1,500 reporters there from around the world. And we think that the American people are just beautiful people. They just don't see what's happening to people. And we think that that's the fundamental problem. If they really saw what was happening to people, we as a people in this country, we wouldn't tolerate it for another minute. And so that really is the problem, is we've got to start, you know, organizing reality tours. Hell, have everybody from Cornell for a day charter buses and go visit, you know, a soup kitchen, or go interview some homeless people, or go talk to a factory that's about ready to lay off everybody. Those are the ways that people really begin to, you know, I mean, it's the human factor. Decide that they need to get involved because people begin to have faces instead of numbers.
Sherry Honko, executive director of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, from a speech given at Cornell University late last year. That's it for this edition of People's Tribune Radio. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the same technologies of computers and robotics that are being used to displace millions of workers worldwide are used for the benefit of society as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League or our other print or audio publications, you can contact us by calling 1-800-691-6888. That number once again, 1-800-691-6888, or visit our website, www.lrna.org. My name is Mike Thornton. It's been my pleasure to be your host. And on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.